What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm JR.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking, where this week, JR, we have a very, very, very long essay. I think probably the longest essay we've had.
I think you're right. So we'll keep ourselves brief so we can allow the essay room to breathe. But this is from Ian Key, who hadn't written for any of the published You and Who books, but when he realised what the idea of the books was, he said, "Is there a forthcoming book that I could write for?" And I pointed him in the direction of You and Who's company, and as it transpired, writing an essay about a family member with whom he has a particular Doctor Who relationship turned out to be the best thing, and that was the best way he was able to tell the story he wanted to tell.
Absolutely. And just briefly, you can probably describe this better than me, but to me, You and Who's company are tales of people's relationships with others that they've met through Doctor Who, or the ways in which Doctor Who has bonded people together, I guess.
Exactly. It's about relationships, and it's about between you and another person and Doctor Who. And I think most of us have got particular people that we associate with the programme, or that the programme maybe, and certainly in a sort of nostalgic way, will remind us of particular people. And that's really what the book's about.
Definitely. So here is a very long essay. Get yourself a cup of tea before you put this one on, and sit back and relax and enjoy it.
And just before we go in, I'll tell you what I really like about this, is that Ian Key is not the kind of standard You and Who author. So this essay has a particular sort of flavour that I'm really happy we have on record, actually. But I'll let it speak for itself. Here it is.
My Mum, Who and I, by Ian Key, a submission for You and Who's company. I was born in the winter of 1969, in the months between the War Games and Spearhead from Space, or if you're a comic strip enthusiast, during the Nightwalkers serial and TV comic. I'm the fourth of four children with a gap of 7 years, and a result, allegedly, of a Royal British Legion reunion earlier in the year, or possibly a power cut. My earliest memories are beige tinted, backed with floral wallpaper, and extensively feature the Wombles and my mum searching for candles underneath the kitchen sink as the electric had gone off again. That's condensing most of the early 1970s into a couple of lines. I'm sure many people of a certain age can relate, though. My first memories of Doctor Who come from the brief trailers shown after Grandstand on a Saturday afternoon. If I was lucky, the single black and white TV in the house hadn't been switched over to ITV for World of Wrestling, or just off as no one was watching it. Whilst BBC Two did exist, I can't remember it ever being watched. Occasionally, I'd get to hear the first strains of the theme starting of the programme itself. However, this was often a cue for my parents, or an older sibling, to come into the room to switch the TV either off or over. I vaguely remember John Pertwee being the Doctor. Not from the TV show, though. I remember him being on the back of my mum's Baking Your Cake and Eating It book, which she'd got from the co-op, probably by collecting coupons. My proper, earliest, bona fide, nailed-on memory of Doctor Who on the TV was the trail for The Android Invasion, where it was revealed the fingers were actually weapons. I remember this clearly as I immediately ran into the kitchen to tell my mum, who was cooking tea, and asked if I could watch it. "No, it's far too scary for you. You're only five. Maybe when you're six," was the response. That Christmas, my mum must have felt sorry for me missing out on being able to watch the show, as one of the presents was the War of the Daleks board game. It was brilliant. Small plastic Daleks, little cardboard doctors in plastic stands. It was the best present ever. until I got a Millennium Falcon in 1982. But tragedy soon struck. I've long blamed my sister Kathy for what happened next, but maybe it was actually manufacturing fault. Upon the first play of the game, the middle section of the board was twisted, as was in the rules of the game, and snapped off. I was inconsolable. My mum took the game back to the shop to get it replaced, only to find that there'd been a common issue, and they never got any more stock. Until the dawn of the internet, my only visual memory of the game was a photo taken on Christmas Day of me, my mum, my sisters, settling down in our beige living room to play the game. Moving on a few months to August 1976, we went on a holiday to Bournemouth. Following an exhaustingly long train journey from Manchester, for whatever reason, our first stop before the guest house was W.H. Smith's. And there it was, being sold off cheap, The Amazing World of Doctor Who. I pleaded with my mum to buy it with the rationale that I'd behaved for the previous 6 hours or so. I always found that if I wanted something, it was better to ask mum so she could persuade my dad if there was ever a chance he'd say no. She agreed and sent my dad off with 50p to pay for it. That week, I spent every opportunity to study the book. The Sinister Stunt Sponge still looks scary today for what's essentially a kid's publication, and I spent my time learning about the Doctor, Cybermen and Draconians. I was hooked, but it would be another year when I was 7 before I was deemed old enough to watch an episode, although to be honest, it was more by chance than design. That day was the 11th of August 1977. Episode 2 of the repeat showing of The Deadly Assassin. Mum and Dad were outside chatting to my Uncle Ken, who'd taken me out somewhere for the day, and I'd been left in the living room to my own devices. The precedent was set, and with the first episode of Horror of Fang Rock until the last episode of Trial of the Time Lord, I watched every episode on original broadcast. I remember it was this day clearly, not only as the internet tells me that the programme was repeated on this day, but because I bought a small ceramic hedgehog from wherever it is I'd been on the day out. I still have this to this day, and the date it was bought was written on the underside of it for posterity. Actually, go back a bit. I tell a lie. I also missed episode 2 of Keeper of Traken in 1981, as I went to see Manchester United lose away at Leicester City. This in itself was a memorable day for the wrong reasons. Not only was it my first ever away trip, not only did we lose, but it was the first time I'd seen heavy-handed police tactics in force as they boarded our supporters club coach on arrival at the designated parking area. Literally, everything was turned out of everyone's bags, resulting in carefully packed lunches, knitting and my copy of The Monster of Peladon, which I'd bought with money saved up from Christmas, being kicked around the floor before being frog-marched into the ground. If I remember correctly, United were 1-0 down at the time we got into the ground, and as a result, I've never liked Leicester, and have always tried to avoid going there since. But anyway, after 1977, I absorbed as much as I could. My day after my 8th birthday, my mum took me to Wimslow on the bus to Argos to get my real birthday present, a Dennis Fisher talking Dalek. I eventually got the Doctor and TARDIS that Christmas, then played with it all day until the battery started to run out, much to people's relief. As a special treat, I was able to have a birthday tea whilst watching the final episode of Image of Fendal, which remains one of my favourite stories to this day. To be honest with you, season 15 as a whole is still one of my favourites. Even Giant and Prawns and poor CSO couldn't spoil it for me. I wasn't able to watch much of the previous season's highs, wasn't aware of the changes in the production team from Hinchcliffe to Williams. It was just Doctor Who, and to my 8-year-old self, it was magical. In early 1979, we moved to the West Midlands. We lived a few miles from the main town, Tardebyg being in between Redditch and Bromsgrove. We had a mobile library van visit our estate once a month. Not having a clue about Target books, let alone release schedules, I was thrilled when I happened to find a bad copy of Genesis of the Daleks to loan. I immediately asked for any more Doctor Who, much to the man's amusement. The next month I was presented with well-thumbed hardback editions of Web of Fear, Loch Ness Monster and The Tenth Planet. As much as reading the books, I'd spent hours staring at the covers and admiring every aspect. The biggest revelation, though, was to come a couple of months later, and it seems incredible now that I wouldn't have been aware of it or thought about it beforehand. After borrowing books from the library, you could buy Doctor Who books. Not only that, Doctor Who was coming to Bromsgrove. Little did I know either of these things, though, until my mum picked me up from school one day and announced that we were getting a bus to the aforementioned town. It was like all my Christmases and birthdays had come at once. There, upstairs in Preedy's, a small newsagent's come book stroke record shop, in full costume, was Tom Baker, surrounded by novelisations of stories I'd never even heard of. Unfortunately, all this was happening just before payday, which I now know to be a genuine time of the month, which tends to last for a couple of weeks, generally starting around the 14th if you're paid on the 1st. I know this to be true, as I often use it myself in my adult life. Being just before payday meant I was only able to choose one book to buy and have signed by the man himself. So after what must have seemed like hours of deliberation and queuing to my mum, I chose the novelisation of John Pertwee's Cursed Apeladon for Tom Baker to sign. Many years later, in 1997, I lost a number of possessions in a fire when the house I lived in was burnt down. This book, with Tom's autograph, was one of the only Doctor Who-related items I'd kept with me as I'd moved around with college and work. I was genuinely sorry to lose it. That Christmas, my brother presented me with a copy of Tom Baker's autobiography, Who on Earth is Tom Baker? Opening it, I found it signed, To Ian, Sorry to Hear About the Fire, Love, Tom Baker. After the revelation that these books existed, I then spent most of the following 4 years visiting and scouring bookshops, now helped in part by Doctor Who Weekly and Monthly, with news of what was coming soon, and having my appetite whetted by Jean-Marc Loffice's 1981 programme guide to the stories not yet published. Actually, it wasn't just me. I give lists of books I was missing from my collection to my mum, which she kept in her purse and she'd look whenever she went shopping or for a day out with my dad. Even now, every now and again, I go back and read an old episode as put into the words by the legend that is Terence Dix, or browse through an old issue of Doctor Who Weekly or Monthly, reading the likes of The Iron Legion or The Time Witch, just for an hour to relive my youth. It's strangely more satisfying sometimes than watching an episode. My mum indulged my love of Doctor Who in the early 1980s, always making sure that I had the latest issue of Doctor Who Weekly or Monthly, to the point of calling the newsagents in nearby Aston Fields if it hadn't arrived when expected, and making sure I had the Doctor Who annual at Christmas. My mum also invented cosplay in 1980. Well, maybe not quite. From somewhere, I don't know where, mum got me a full-size Tom Baker scarf. Full length. So when the local church had a summer fete with a fancy dress competition, I was entered. Wearing an old long coat I borrowed from somewhere, my dad's trilby and my newly obtained scarf, I was Doctor Who. I won the boys' section easily, being the only entrant, and was the joint winner of the competition overall. I was thrilled, but slightly miffed, as I thought I should have been the outright winner too. Now I'm older, I can see why I had to share the prize. The other participant in the competition was a 5-year-old girl in a fairy outfit. I say she was 5, she may have been older. She was certainly younger than I was. I'm fairly sure I didn't get the prize either, as whatever it would have been unshareable, so probably would have been just promised another Doctor Who novelisation the next time Mum and I went shopping. This wasn't the only time my mum got creative on my behalf. To earn what was probably a making of Badger Cubs, possibly called recycling now, we had to create something out of household rubbish. Most of my peers chose to make shields and swords and things like that. I chose to make, or rather, I got my mum to make, K9. How hard could it be? A kitchen roll tube for a tail, a square box body with K9 drawn on with a black marker pen, and an egg box for a head. Peter Purvis would have been so proud of me and my mum. Sadly, the night that it was presented at Cubs, K9 didn't last, as one of my fellow Cubs managed to knock the head off with a well-aimed tennis ball. Cue me walking home like a marshman from full circle, carrying K9's egg box head in hand, dragging its body behind me. I did get the badge, though. At some point in 1984, my parents rented a video recorder. It seems strange now that people used to rent TV and video recorders rather than buying them outright. My first video my parents rented was Police Academy at the cost of £8 for a weekend. We must have watched it 3 or 4 times to get our money's worth. Getting our money's worth wasn't an issue with the next video we rented. During the first weeks of the summer holidays, my parents rented Revenge of the Cybermen. I'm not sure if I'm correct, but I'm fairly sure I am. My mum rented it for £10 for the whole week from Owen Owens in Redditch, which, if I remember correctly, was mainly a furniture and homeware store. Strange how they'd be renting VHS tapes, especially ones with such a niche appeal at the time. I must have watched it daily for that week, praying for the day when other stories would be available. I think my family were praying also, as I knew the edited compilation word for word. Later that summer, I travelled to Blackpool with my parents for a week. From what I can work out, it was my last family holiday with my parents. Other than record shops and bookshops, the only thing of interest to me was the Doctor Who exhibition on Blackpool's Golden Mile. After visiting the exhibition on probably the first day of our trip, somehow my mum managed to persuade the people that ran it to agree to me going back to dress up as a Cyberman and promote the exhibition the following day, and the day after, and the day after that. By the third day, I was wearing David Banks's Cyber Leader costume that he'd worn in Earthshock in The Five Doctors. I did spend a couple of hours in a Dalek, but found this mostly annoying because passers-by thought it was amusing to try and kick or try and push it into a wall. Being a Cyberman was much more fun, as you could scare the shit out of parents who had seconds earlier been telling their kids that there was nothing to be scared of and it wasn't real. As they walked past you down the long dark corridor at the start of the exhibition, I vividly remember grown men jumping out the skin as a gloved cyber hand was placed on their shoulder. The only other thing I remember about that holiday was using the same persuasion I'd used back in 1976 to get my Amazing World of Doctor Who book. Even though Blackpool wasn't as far as Bournemouth, I persuaded my mum to let me have some pocket money to buy the Sex Pistols Flogging a Dead Horse compilation. My dad wasn't too impressed, and when he saw the plastic turd on the sleeve, well, I don't think he appreciated the music much either. I don't want to give the impression that my dad didn't welcome or support my fixation with the TV series, or Doctor Bloody Who, as he called it, or this rubbish, on the off chance he was in the same room as at the time it was being broadcast. Years later, in the early 90s, after he mentioned over tea that one of his colleagues had got the satellite channel B-Sky B in order to watch football, I enthusiastically explained that they were repeating early episodes of Doctor Who for the first time on UK Gold. For the next couple of years, until I persuaded my dad to get satellite TV ourselves, he would regularly buy blank VHS videotapes so that his colleague, Nan, could and would get up early every Sunday morning to record my favourite show. Years later, I asked why she hadn't just set the timer. She explained that my dad had told her how much being able to see these old shows meant to me, and she feared missing even a few minutes. After leaving school and starting work in 1986, I met a few like-minded souls, some of whom had obtained third or fourth generation VHS tapes of old episodes. As we only had one TV in the house, I had to wait until my parents were out, either at a Legion meeting for the evening or a Saturday or Sunday afternoon when nothing else was on TV. My parents were respectively presidents of the men's and ladies' sections of Handforth Royal British Legion, so thankfully their official duties meant there were often occasions to do this. I remember watching the copy of The Ark that I'd borrowed with my mum. I'm sure she was more taken with the enjoyment and enthusiasm of me watching a blurry 1960s TV show with a knackered horizontal hold and muffled sound than she was actually watching the show itself. If it wasn't for my mum's encouragement, I don't know if my obsession with Doctor Who would have lasted so long. I'm sure some people would think that it's an unhealthy thing, especially as until the relaunch of the show in 2005, being a Doctor Who fan was derided by many. But I formed many friendships and had opportunities arise due to it. Within fandom, there's often an opinion that Doctor Who fans can't also appreciate or wouldn't be interested in other things. For me, this isn't true, as I have just as many friends through the mutual love of the legendary DJ John Peel and the music he played and introduced to the masses, and football, specifically Manchester United. Other than a couple of years in the late 1980s when alcohol, the Manchester scene and going out became more of a thing, I never really lost my love of Doctor Who. The Sylvester McCoy era initially passed me by, but I soon caught up on VHS. In my early 20s, my love for the show was fully reignited when a friend, Christopher Joyce, bought me the War Games VHS for my 21st birthday. With me being the completist, the collecting bug bit again. And whether it be an official BBC release on VHS or DVD, or a compilation on record of UK Gold, I was soon at it. And I've only just recently finished 25 years later with the release of The Underwater Menace on DVD. It does seem a shame that since the birth of the internet, the art of searching things out and the joy of finding them has been pretty much taken away. That is, unless you're collecting them for the sake of owning the physical article. Although a search on eBay is pretty much guaranteed to find most things. I would have been unimaginable back in my youth, that when I first started collecting Target books, I would one day have copies of all of them, plus issues of Doctor Who Weekly on my iPad, and all the existing episodes of the TV series on DVD and also on a hard drive. In more recent years, my fandom has often been indulged by my friends. Nicky, who, knowing I was in London whilst Russell T Davies was signing The Writer's Tale in Manchester, drove from near Birmingham to get me a copy for my birthday and ended up spending a few minutes discussing shoes with the aforementioned showrunner. Can't see her doing that with Stephen Moffat. And Phil, who bought me a gold Dalek for Christmas in 2005, both of which I still own. The Dalek and the book, not Phil, obviously. Nicky also bought me a piece of Doctor Who autographed memorabilia, a page of a script from Tom Baker's Warrior's Gate. Obviously, not signed by Tom Baker, but by Sylvester McCoy. And that's still on my wall. My mum passed away on the 30th of April 2007. As anyone losing somebody will know, that normality goes out the window for a period of time, and it was early June before I got round to catching up on things I'd recorded. I sat down to watch a marathon session of Doctor Who, from Evolution of the Daleks to The Family of Blood. I never read any of the new adventures released during the programme's wilderness years. This was a time when I was going out and doing other things, so I wasn't aware of the epilogue to the human nature storyline. Whilst apparently some of the sentiment was changed for the televised version, I found the Remembrance Day scene completely heartbreaking but completely fitting. Whilst it was also tying up Paul Cornell's story, for me personally it felt my favourite show was also paying its respects to my mum. It's hard to imagine what my life would have been like if my mum hadn't encouraged and fostered my love for Doctor Who. The amount of books I've read, TV programmes I've watched, the amount of making-ofs I've watched, the amount of people I've met, the amount of podcasts I've listened to. My life would be very, very much different. I certainly wouldn't be the person I am today without that. Thanks, Mum.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.